I actually went out there for the first time in late 2004. So that was the time where I was going out to Nepal for about 3 months as part of a much longer trip around the world. And it was really to just volunteer, but also, you know, partially to, you know, do some trekking and things like that. But that was the initial trip. I came back a year later in early 2006. That was sort of my second time. And that was really, again, just to sort of have one more volunteering opportunity there before I came back to the United States. And that, in early 2006, is when, you know, I started to understand what the greater problems in Nepal were, and that's when I decided to, you know, start this organization and move back to Nepal, you know, sort of on a more permanent basis.
Could you just give us a brief thumbnail of the situation with the child trafficking and how these children who are not really orphans ended up in an orphanage?
Yeah, you know, it all began with the civil war going on in Nepal. That was from 96 to 2006. And essentially what was happening was that, you know, in these very remote mountain villages, you know, the Maoist rebels had sort of taken over the entire country because there was very little police presence. The king was actually in power in Kathmandu and ostensibly in the country. But the Maoist rebels, you know, grew their army fairly quickly. They began taking child soldiers. Parents obviously didn't want their children to become soldiers. And the solution came in the form of a guy that would come into the village and say, hey, I can take your child. I can bring them over the mountains to Kathmandu where they'll be, you know, safer. Well, they'll be away from the Maoists. Well, you know, they'll get an education and, you know, and then they can return to you in, you know, 10 years or something like that. And that was sort of the deal. The parents paid this man a tremendous amount of money for this opportunity to save and educate and give their child a future, and not realizing that they were actually giving their child to a child trafficker. And that guy would be taking all these kids and essentially just kind of creating orphanages because he'd made his money on the front end. And then later they found that they could, you know, put the kids up for adoption and make money through adoption agencies. They could sell the kids into slavery. Now they operate fake orphanages for volunteers to come and give donations to this orphanage that really just goes in, you know, the child trafficker's pocket.
And so you figured out what was going on and you had to leave after just a few months. Did you know for sure when you left you were going to come back, or was it just a tiny idea that had been planted in your head at that point?
That's a good question, because the funny thing is that I had no intention of coming back at all. I didn't go out to Nepal because I'd always wanted to volunteer. I really went out for just pretty terrible reasons. I went out just because I sort of felt guilted into volunteering, and I didn't really want to. I didn't really like kids or anything like that at the time. And volunteering actually really changed my heart on all that, to be honest. But when I left Nepal, you know, the second time I was there and found out this whole situation, as you're referring to, I didn't leave thinking I would come back. I left because the, you know, the Maoist rebels had essentially invaded Kathmandu. There was, you know, the streets were pretty dangerous at the time. It was a fairly unsafe place. And I had to leave along with most of the other tourists and volunteers. The reason I came back was because there was a sort of a separate thing going on where I had kind of discovered these seven kids sort of living by themselves, or essentially by themselves, and I was trying to take care of them and trying to get them into a good orphanage because we didn't have room in our children's home. And I left and then sort of, you know, followed up with the people who were going to go pick them up and rescue the kids a couple weeks later. But what had happened was essentially the fighting was so bad on the streets and everything that it took them a while to go rescue these kids. And by the time they got there, the trafficker had gotten to these seven kids and, you know, sold them into slavery. So I'm now back in the U.S. finding all this out. You know, the revolution has, you know, happened there. The king has been overthrown. And I kind of thought, you know, I'm back in the U.S. permanently. And wasn't that an interesting adventure? And then I'm finding out that these seven kids that I've been taking care of had actually been kidnapped and sold. And so understanding that nobody else was going to go look for them, and believe me, I tried to find other people to go try to find these kids, but nobody could really do it. So that was the impetus to go back and search for them and start this organization.
You actually had to form a nonprofit, correct?
Yeah, I did, in that, you know, the reason I formed a nonprofit was, and again, I never had any intentions to form a nonprofit. That was never a lifelong goal or anything like that. It was only that I knew that I would need resources to go back. You know, I was dead broke. I would need resources even to get back to Nepal to search for these kids. And then of course, after that, see if potentially we could even find the families of all these kids that we've been taking care of, whose families were somewhere in the mountains, but nobody would go look for them. And of course, the kids couldn't, you know, just sort of try to get back into the mountains to try to find their families. And so the reason I formed the nonprofit was so that people could, you know, safely donate and, you know, to sort of just put a more official structure on something that I was going to do anyway. And that was sort of the reasoning behind doing all the paperwork and everything to actually turn this into a nonprofit.
You actually met your wife in Kathmandu, is that correct?
I did, yeah. So, yeah, it's funny because, you know, I originally went out there and specifically volunteered in an orphanage in Nepal for reasons that are pretty appalling if you think about it. I just thought it would kind of sound like a cool story and maybe make like a good pickup line or something like that to tell people that, you know, I was volunteering in an orphanage in Nepal. And so that was kind of the original idea to go out there, which is highly embarrassing now to think about. But it actually turned into something I really grew to love. But then, you know, much later, you know, I was out there and a young woman, you know, my age, I guess, was emailing me because she had done a lot of, you know, volunteer work in, you know, in Zambia and Vietnam with her church and sort of gone on mission trips and things like that. I was not a Christian at the time. And so, you know, we just became friends. We sort of had a shared school. We were both connected to the University of Virginia. And she ended up coming out to Kathmandu to essentially volunteer with our small organization. And I met her and immediately sort of fell in love with her. And I'd been talking to her for months before that. So I had become pretty good friends with her before I knew anything about her other than just her heart. And she's American. She's from San Diego. And we got married pretty quickly.
Well, as it turned out, this did make a good story. You wrote the book Little Princes, One Man's Promise to Bring Home the Lost Children of Nepal. It came out, the paperback came out in 2011. When did the hardcover come out?
Probably just maybe 6 months before that or something like that. It was right around early 2011, I think.
So this has been 6 years ago, I guess, since this book came out. Did you write it because it was a good story and you just thought it needed to be told, or did you hope to actually maybe spur other people to try to make a difference in their own lives?
That's a good question. You know, it's funny how this actually happened. Again, you know, as you'll sort of start to see, I kind of bumbled into everything. I didn't intend to write a book. What happened was I was just keeping a blog because I just like to write. And then I found that the blog was actually pretty useful to raise awareness. Just, it was a small blog, but just, you know, so people could kind of follow along what I was doing in Nepal. And then at one point there was a small article about what I was doing in the local Charlottesville, Virginia paper. And that turned into a little feature in the University of Virginia Alumni Magazine. And that turned into a small article in Reader's Digest. And then a literary agent saw that and then went back and read the blog, which was apparently something like 1,500 pages at that time, and convinced me to just turn it into a book. So really writing the book was really just taking the blog and sort of, you know, putting the structure on it. But it's funny that you talk about the story, because when she approached me to do it, I initially said, you know, I didn't really want to do that, but because I said, you know, there's no story here. There's nothing interesting about this. And she convinced me that, no, there was, you know, you did this and this happened and this happened. You met your wife and you go to the mountains and you get hurt and you get lost in the mountains and you're rescuing these kids. And when she said, I'm like, I guess that is kind of a story. Yeah. So no, I was the last one to recognize this as a story at all. But to your point about why, you know, one is just to sort of bring awareness to this issue that nobody has any right to know about, this little kids in Nepal. And second of all, just to sort of try to encourage folks who don't volunteer, who have not done this, that it doesn't take any skill, I would argue. I mean, all it takes is sort of a perseverance to just kind of keep on going, and you can actually make some kind of difference.
So you were in town for WKCTC's One Book Read. Have you done this before, been part of a community read of this book in other places?
I have. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's you know, we've been incredibly blessed with how this book has kind of turned out and how it's done and everything like that and the reach that it's had. So one of the things that I've really gotten to do is go around to a lot of colleges that have made this a common read for the entire freshman class, or towns that have made it their one town read. And it's, incredible, especially sort of doing it, you know, intergenerationally when you get to talk to younger folks and older folks and everything else about it, because I think everybody is, you know, anxious to learn about what's going on around the world. And so this is an opportunity to do it. It's always a great pleasure to do it.
If this book, if this story, if this journey are what you're remembered for, are you fine with that?
Yeah, I think I really am. It's, you know, it's especially because it's something that I was able to do, you know, with my wife. So it's really a family, it's a family affair. It's something that I just completely stumbled into, but I found so much out in Kathmandu. I mean, I found my wife out there. I found my faith out there. I found everything out there that's really shaped who I am today. And the fact that people let me share this story is sort of unbelievable to me.